breaking ball and a call. Strike three. Third strikeout for Zach.
He's going to just watch it go. A grand slam for Bryson Stott.
And there's a high fly ball. Deep right field. Harper watches it fly.
WHYY and Billy Penn, it is hitting season. Hey there, podcast pals. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight and Billy Penn. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. Coming up, the Phillies split their weekend series with the Pirates, losing two out of the three games during the course of the weekend on Friday and on Sunday. We're going to talk about the Pirates series and the fact that the Phillies still around 500. What is there to say about the Phillies right now that we haven't already said? We'll find some things to say during the course of this podcast, so don't you go anywhere thinking that there's nothing interesting to say about this milquetoast baseball team that continues to frustrate us. There's lots to say, and we're going to talk about it here on this podcast. Justin Clue and Liz Rocher joining me again for this edition of Hittin' Season. Liz Rocher from Yahoo Sports. Follow her on Liz on Twitter. Not follow her on Liz Rocher. Follow her on Twitter. I'll get through an intro at some point without making a mistake. One of these days, it's going to happen. Follow her on Twitter at Liz Rocher. Thank you. I appreciate it. Hi, Liz. How's it going?
Hi, John. I'm doing better now that I'm not watching the Phillies.
Yeah. Tough watch on Sunday. Tough watch for sure. Justin Clue, I know he's watching.
Did not enjoy it, no.
Nope. Baseball prospectus is Justin Clue, of course. Follow him on Twitter at Justin_Clue. Justin, rough one today for the Phillies. How's it going?
Did you see that the Pirates broadcast replayed the five-run inning the Pirates had with the Always Sunny in Philadelphia music in the background?
I saw that.
I thought, that was delightful.
Well done.
They think they've got us, and that's adorable.
Well, you got to appreciate a good trolling opportunity when you get it, and your team name is the Pittsburgh Pirates, because who knows if that's going to come around again during the course of the season, right? I mean, the Pirates are frisky here in the early going, no doubt about it. 11-5, better record than the Phillies by far. I'd love for the Phillies to be out to an 11-5 start, that's for sure. Phillies are not out to an 11-5 start. What are they now? Are they 7-7? Is that what they are? 8-8? 7-7? I can't. 8-8. Okay, I forgot how many games they've played. Yeah, Phillies are 8-8 here in the early going, playing 500 ball. And man, this is a team that looks every bit the 500 team right now. Pitching's been good for the most part. It was still good for most of the weekend. The game on Sunday definitely got away from them a little bit, but for the most part, the pitching was not the problem against the Pirates here in this four-game series, and particularly over the weekend. I know you guys recapped the Thursday game. That was the three-homer game. That was the game where they slugged right in Howard Eskin's face. I know you guys were talking about that. Well, as I was listening to your podcast, I was thinking to myself, maybe Rob Thompson and the Phillies shouldn't get quite so smug after one game in which the daycare each hit a home run, because as the weekend went along, not as much slug. In fact, I mean, you had Trey Turner hit one out, but generally speaking, it was back to singles. It was back to a lot of weak contact and the offense struggling again to put runs on the board. Now, I'm not going to sit here and defend Howard for a dumb question, because it certainly was a dumb question. There's nothing Rob Thompson and really even Kevin Long can do about it at this point, but team's still not slugging. You had a Kyle Schwarber leadoff home run. Other than that, team is still not slugging, especially with runners on base and runners in scoring position. They're not putting up crooked numbers, Justin. And, you know, we're just waiting. It's a waiting game, and we can yell about it and yell at the TV as much as we want. But it's going to come around at some point. We just got to wait.
Yeah. Yep. They are a sloppy bunch. These are a bunch. I called them the messiest mid squad in baseball in my write up for Baseball Prospectus about the Friday night game where they debuted the City Connects. And that's really what you're looking at. You're looking at a team that two or three times a night kind of has an at bat or an inning or a swing or a play. This is just the offensive side, a base running gaffe, where things just come apart entirely, and you stop thinking, oh yeah, this is like a good team having a rough stretch, and it's like, no, more like this team occasionally looks fundamentally unsound, which is even more annoying because these are a bunch of guys who should know better. So that you can see that on off, you can see that on defense any night of the week too, but on offense, yeah, it's been especially notable because that's an area where it's really cost them some games. It's really cost them some really good pitching performances, and they aren't giving their staff, including the bullpen, much room to breathe. So yeah, it was just more of the same Phillies. You know, again, they're not getting easier to watch, but they sure are predictable.
That's very true, Liz. They are among the more predictable teams in baseball right now. You just get the feeling anytime they get anything cooking on the base paths, they're going to hit into a double play. They've hit into a million double plays this year, or they're going to strike out in a big spot, or somebody's going to tie their shoelaces together and fall down on the base paths as they're trying to get from second to third. I mean, it's just, that's the way things are going here with this team. They're not fundamentally sound. We're talking about the offense right now, and 3.73 runs per game so far is 22nd in Major League Baseball. I'm actually surprised it's quite that much or they're that high up on the list. But you could make the argument, and
that's actually I'll just say that being surprised that the Phillies aren't worse is the theme that I saw like on Twitter today. I saw a lot of, it feels like Trey Turner is actually hitting 150.
No, he's over 300.
He had a, you know, 3-for-4 day. Exactly. You know, it just feels like he's not doing it. It feels like the Phillies are doing worse than they are. Like they're 500, which is it's mid, it's meh. It feels like they're really bad. It feels a lot worse than it actually is. That is actually kind of concerning.
Well, the reason,
yeah, John, only three guys have hit into multiple double plays this year, John. That's not that many guys. That's like a third of the lineup.
Fair enough.
And I don't think it's pertinent at all that one of the guys is Bryce Harper, and yes, he has hit into five double plays, and yes, that is the worst in baseball. But don't worry, he's not
having a tough time.
He's not the only one. He's tied with luminaries like Jake Berger and Alex Verdugo.
Oh, so, good.
Come on.
Yeah.
Well, why even bring it up?
Well, he's making up for it with the long Oh, no, he's not. And none of them are right now. I thought this was an interesting statistic from Sunday. The Good Fight posted this. The Phillies struck out 15 Pirates hitters on Sunday. Sounds pretty good, right? You want to strike guys out. The Pirates scored 9 runs on them. Why? They slugged the ball. Hit a grand slam, hit another solo home run after that. Andrew McCutchen hit a 2-run home run late. The Phillies offense struck out just 5 times in the game on Sunday and scored 2 runs.
Hey, that's pretty good.
Yeah, no, but it's not. Aww. It's not so good because it's weak contact.
Now, why'd you have to say the second part?
I did. I had to.
It's like they have this new hitting philosophy, and it should be doing the things it's doing the things that they want, but the results are the opposite of what they used to be. It's something real weird.
This is the crux of the situation with the offense, and this is, we're not the first people to talk about it, but I think we can kind of drill down into it a little bit here, and that is, we heard all
about the Phillies offense.
Yeah, we're gonna solve the
problem.
I think
right,
we're
here the first.
No.
Right now,
let's fix it. The issue with the Phillies in the offseason, a lot of it was, people were talking about the chase rate and the Phillies' bad at bats, right? You know, swinging at pitches outside the strike zone, not walking enough, all that. The walk rate's up this year. The chase rate is down. The strikeout rate is down. And the contact is also way down. Not the amount of contact they're making, but the amount of quality contact. And you can just see it in how late they are on fastballs and hitters' counts, how they're unwilling to take advantage. I mean, Castellanos said it in his walk-off on Saturday. He's like, for the first time all year, I went up to the plate without an approach. I just went up looking for the first thing that I could hit hard someplace and swung. Now, I think
What do we just talk about?
Yep.
that's what we just talked about. Sorry if that wasn't clear. That this team that is apparently trying to correct the aspects that define its offense, like, oh, a lot of guys who chase, a lot of guys who are free swingers. I mean, that is the definition of the entire offense, and apparently they've been taking steps to curb those who chase the most, like guys like Castellanos specifically, who is the one who's been talking about this. And then there was like a kind of a throwaway comment in one of these stories where Rob Thompson was like, you know, I'm just, you know, I don't know, maybe like letting them just keep free, like letting them be how they are might be the answer to like their struggles. Maybe they're like, even this adjustment that we're trying to have them do to improve their approach is actually hindering it because they're not free to do the kind of hitting and swinging and approaching that they typically do. as problematic as that can be as well. But, you know, I feel like anybody could have diagnosed this coming along when you find out, oh, they're trying to impose new things on them. All we talk about is that this team needs to be left in a comfortable space to perform at the level they're supposed to be able to perform at. And I don't know. Sometimes you turn the wrong knob. Sometimes these guys, I think it's kind of easy for them to think too hard. I think that's where we concluded on that.
Yeah. I will say that it's like you can't blame them for trying to make this change, because you want them to try and isolate the good things and get rid of the bad things. But that's also known as being really greedy in a game where succeeding 3 times out of 10 is good, and failing the rest of the time is actually really good. Yeah. Like, that's an old, you know, that's an old way to talk about it, but you get too greedy when you try to isolate the good things, because you cannot just have the good things. If you want the Phillies to be themselves, you're going to have to accept some of this. You're going to have to accept that you're going to chase bad pitches sometimes. I think the key is that they are overthinking it. They're just like applying it at all times. And I don't know if that's what's being asked of them, for them to analyze every single at bat and every single pitch like this, because that, as you guys have said, is clearly what's getting them down, because they now have lost the ability to identify good pitches. I think we're all just waiting for them to stop. Is that what we're doing now? Are we just waiting for them to stop doing this?
I think at some point there's going to be a throwing up of the hands and just say, okay, guys, just do what feels comfortable in the box. And I don't think Bryce Harper is among those who are trying to change their approach at the plate. I think Harper's approach has, generally speaking, been a pretty good one over the years, and even last year. I don't think he was one of those guys that we were saying was chasing a lot of balls out of the strike zone, but he just looks off so far this year. He's had a few games where he looked like he was coming out of it, swinging the bat well, making good contact, and then he comes right back and just kind of puts up a clunker. Kyle Schwarber has had some good moments. Like, all these guys have had good moments. Castellanos had a good game on Saturday. Trey Turner on Sunday got a little bit of the power stroke going with his solo home run. That was a great swing on 3-1, so that was a really good thing to see. He got a fastball inner half and turned on it, hit one out of the ballpark. That's very good. So I think it's just, I don't know, just the Pistons aren't all firing together. We kind of know that. You can see that. And
Yeah.
I mean, and I agree with you guys. I think the engine will start to hum a little bit, but it's been bumpy so far here in the early going. And I agree with you guys. I think the approach thing has been something that they've really been taking into the batter's box with them. Castellanos seemed to confirm that, and at least for him. And I would imagine if he's dealing with something like that, the other guys are dealing with that too. But even the guys who are hitting well, they're not hitting for power. Like, Trey Turner has an average over 300, but his OPS is still, like, I think in the low 700s or upper 600s. Like, it's just, it's all, generally speaking, weak contact. But if they're hitting with runners in scoring position, you can handle that. They've been coming up small in clutch situations too. So I don't know. It's we're just gonna wait. We're just waiting to see these guys come out of it. Did you know that Johan Rojas is batting 189 and Bryce Harper is batting 190 on the season so far?
I read Johan Rojas was batting like 429 in the last 7 games. Is that correct?
Is that right? I didn't see that.
I in no way know the math behind this. I'm just repeating what might be a lie. This is actually what's wrong with everything online right now.
It's all a lie. Yep.
But
totally
I'm just saying, someone out there thinks that that is true, at the very least, because I read it. Someone out there wants other people to think that that is true. That I know for sure. But yeah, no, I think you're right. I think at some point they're going to have to decide. And I'm not saying we're there now, but they're going to have to decide if trying to perfect the approach that feels natural is working better than just doing what feels natural. You know, if you're going to make adjustments, that's great. They should always be trying to get, you know, better or doing what works, but it can't be at the cost of what was working before. Otherwise, you're just going backwards. And we're kind of seeing that right now. And they're just going to have to, you know, decide. Like, you hear guys all the time saying, like, oh, you know, the switch flipped again because I was doing this. It wasn't working. And I just went back to, like, what I was doing before. And that worked. We've seen pitchers do that. We've seen hitters do that. And, you know, maybe that's the outcome of this. But I think you're seeing them kind of starting slow, but also trying to make some fundamental changes that, either aren't taking as quickly as they wanted or are just requiring a long, like a regular length adjustment period that mm-hmm. people are just very impatient about, including me.
Yeah. And I'll say, Liz, the other thing too, is they've played in a lot of bad weather this year. I think they've hit into some fair share of bad luck. Also, they've a lot of line outs, it seems to me, we've seen in some big situations. So, there's nothing ingenious to say here, you know. I mean, no. I think you, yeah.
They've got a good stretch coming. They do. They have a good stretch coming.
They do.
And we're going to, I think, you know, their current home stretch is a great stretch to start, you know, trying to get back on there, because they're going to be playing some teams that are barely team. Like these are dictionary definition teams are coming in to Citizens Bank Park. These are teams that the Phillies would benefit them a lot to be playing them and being able to capitalize on how lousy they are, because they have a good stretch coming. I'm not saying it's soon, but you know, we're going to see this team play good baseball eventually.
I did look it up. Johan Rojas, if it's seven games, he's coming. He came into Sunday hitting .263. But if it's, we're looking at his last five games coming into Sunday being the sixth, he came into Sunday hitting .313 over his last five games. So it is possible for him to, you know, be hitting well over the last, you know, cherry picked number of games.
I was
going
to say, this is cherry picking season for Johan Rojas. If you want to throw that stat
early,
out there, you can do that.
It's cherry picking season. I'm not agreeing with it, but you are the one who put a 100% unsourced comment about Johan Rojas hitting over 400 over his last seven
games.
Now we've sourced it and corrected it.
And the right information is out there. See, I started the conversation, Liz.
You're just asking
for
questions.
That, you're welcome. I just threw the shutters up on the marketplace of ideas. And
New York Times style, the headline on this podcast will be Johan Rojas hitting .463.
Dot, dot, dot. Or is he? It's called suspense, Liz.
We're just asking questions, right?
The Phillies aren't going to be interesting. We're going to have to make them interesting.
That's right. We got to make it up. Let's make up the facts.
Let's not. I don't want to imagine what
let's
we'd
talk
have to
a little
do.
Zach Wheeler here. On Sunday, he was mowing guys down. His fastball was up around 95 miles an hour up in the zone. I mean, he was making Pirates hitters look awful. 10 strikeouts in five innings, two walks, just one run allowed. He had a 2-1 lead in the sixth inning, and then things went sideways in a big, big hurry for him. An error by Alec Bohm to lead off the inning certainly did not help, kind of opened the doorway there. But then he walks, I believe it was Rowdy Tellez, gives up a single to Andrew McCutchen, and it looked like a broken back single, but it was a legitimate single up the middle, and then gave up the grand slam to Kazuski or whatever that dude's name was. Who cares?
Sawinski.
I know. Whatever. I know what his name. I don't know. Who cares? Sawinski hits a grand slam out to right center field, and all of a sudden, a 2-1 lead is a 5-2 deficit. And I think what we've seen from this Phillies team is so far this year, when they take a body blow like that, they don't get back up. Like, their offense is not in a good enough shape to take a body blow like that. And you could just see, as soon as that ball left the yard, that was the ball game. That was the game. There was no way Phillies were going to chip away at that lead. Sir Anthony Dominguez had a patented Sir Anthony Dominguez inning so far here in 2024, giving up a home run and striking out the side. Like, that is, if that's not quintessential Sir Anthony Dominguez right now, I don't know what is. But for Zach Wheeler, on Twitter, I referred to it as an implosion. Just because of the quickness with which it all happened, the grand slam. It was his first grand slam that he's ever given up in a Phillies uniform, which is just crazy to think about. His last grand slam allowed was in June of 2018 when he was with the Mets against Cody Bellinger. But, you know, it's unfortunate, Liz, that he starts off, the inning started off with an error. But the walk is what kills you there, right? The walk just feeds it. And so Andrew McCutchen then gets a base hit to center field. And the pitch that Sawinski hit for a grand slam wasn't terrible, but it was yet the bases are loaded and nobody out. You had no room for error there. At the very least, if that ball's off the wall, it's a bases clearing double. So either way, there's not a whole lot of difference there. I don't know. I called it an implosion, Liz, and I got a lot of pushback on social media about that. Really, an implosion? An error, a walk, a hit, and a grand slam? That's an implosion? And my argument was, well, if Aaron Nola had done that, we'd all be screaming about the Aaron Nola implosion.
It is kind of, I mean, it is kind of an implosion because he'd already given up two runs before. One run going into that inning.
But,
yes, one run going into that inning. So an implosion, I mean, if you give up a grand slam in the sixth inning of your start, that's an implosion. In the first or second inning, that's not an implosion. That's just a bad start.
Right.
This was not a bad start for Wheeler. He had a great start. And then I watched this as it happened. And the walk to Rowdy Tellez, I remember thinking, this is trouble. Because he got in trouble with him immediately. He went up, I think, 3-0 before he threw a strike. It was knife's edge. And I thought, this feels dangerous. And I was right, and I hated it. I didn't think it was going to be Andrew McCutchen, who had a great day.
Yeah,
he had his 300th home run, I believe.
He did.
And he, during the intro, apparently he's the only Pirate who wasn't booed. Like, Phillies fans love their players. Like, Andrew McCutchen did not have a great time with the Phillies. He did not hit well. He was injured. And yet, we love him. We love him. He came here and he kicked our butts. And we love him anyway.
So a walk, error, walk, hit in a grand slam. I think you're just crossing the line for an implosion. I think most of the things have to be the pitcher's fault. And obviously, I'll give you the error. The error is not Zach Wheeler's fault. But like, you know, a walk, a hit, and a grand slam. I mean, that's at least a mini implosion. A collapse of sorts. Like, it is. I think that's fair. I think it's just over the line of fair, but it's fair. Three things, that's enough for an implosion. But right.
You look at the bigger context here.
I mean, you'd say with Aaron Nola, we call it an implosion. I think the context is a little different there. Aaron Nola, we're accustomed to seeing him have moments like that where one thing goes wrong and he just spirals and there's more base runners and there's runs coming in, even if no matter how things were earlier in the game. We're all aware of Aaron Nola's reputation. Wheeler's is different, you know?
Yeah.
He's the steadying force, he's this ace, he's the guy who doesn't routinely suffer innings like that. So that when he does, which is inevitable, it's a little more jarring. But yeah, I think Nola probably earns that, you know, implosion label a little sooner than Wheeler because he's more susceptible to that. That's the reputation he has. So I think the context is different for between pitchers. But the bigger picture here is that the lineup isn't hitting. The defense has let Wheeler down a few times. The Phillies can't turn double plays. He threw two wild pitches on Sunday, which I think gives him three for the year. And his wild pitch total is now tripled from 2022 and 2023 when he had one all year long. So it goes back to sloppiness. It's still sloppiness. They are off target. They are slow to respond. They are generally clueless. Nick Castellanos let that fly ball drop the other day because the Phillies said he's still adjusting to depth perception with the new scoreboard in right field. That was just
I heard him talk about that. And I mean, it's not that I believe it, but
yeah.
You shouldn't talk about it, maybe.
Like, fair enough. Like, fair enough. But that's the kind of, just that goes in the same file. Like, the stuff doesn't stop when Wheeler's pitching. Often when he's pitching, the only thing going right is Wheeler is pitching. Right. Sunday was a case of this great pitcher running into the kind of trouble every pitcher is going to see, especially without getting too much from his teammates. His grand slam
Cole Hamels 2.0.
His grand slam was on the 100th pitch of the day. So I think, unlike on opening day when Thompson pulled him too soon, maybe he leaves him in an inning too long today because, you know, different games have different events and different context as well. I think, like Liz said, Wheeler looked good all day, and then he looked a little tired. And as a reader of people, you can say it's on Thompson to be a better judge of what Wheeler can do, like a better judge than even Wheeler is. Like, that's his job. So all that being said, it's not stupid to trust Wheeler there. You know, he'd been having a good day. Lauber wrote that Wheeler made this mechanical adjustment, Scott Lauber in the Inquirer. Mm-hmm. He was being more upright in his delivery. He was getting better movement. He was getting higher velocity. Lauber said Wheeler had 15 swings and misses and 10 strikeouts like today. That's a very effective...
Yeah,
that's a very effective start. The Pirates just weren't biting when he would go low in the zone. And when he served up that curveball to Jack Suwinski, that was just right where he likes him. And, well, that's the afternoon. So what I make of Wheeler's start was that he threw one of the big mistake pitches of the season that he's going to throw. You know, there won't be a ton of them, but that's going to be one of them. And it happened to come during a period in which the Phillies don't really have another strength to draw from.
Yeah, and that's the key.
Bad timing.
It's bad timing, and they don't have another strength to draw from it. And my tweet was, you don't see Zach Wheeler implode ever but that's what just happened. And just like that was shock. It was shocking. It was shocking. Like you just didn't expect to see that from Zach in that spot. But Zach is not invincible for sure. And clearly he made some bad pitches. He probably was tiring. He probably was left in for a batter too long. I don't know who the Phillies bring in out of the bullpen in that spot that doesn't get them, that gets them out of the trouble. Like Sir Anthony Dominguez came in. He probably gives up a grand slam in that spot anyway. You know, it just, it's by that point, the bed was made, but, you know, maybe not. Maybe you pull Zach Wheeler after the Andrew McCutchen hit and things work itself out, or you limit the damage to one run or something like that. But when that ball left the yard, that was it, because this offense has scored 6 runs total in Zach Wheeler's 4 starts so far. And of course, the Phillies now 0-4. In their aces starts. Half of their losses have come in Zach Wheeler's starts so far here in 2024. Like that shouldn't be.
Hideous. It's disgusting and disgraceful.
Especially when you're battling a team in the Atlanta Braves for the National League East who lost their ace this week for the season with to a Tommy John surgery. Like they've lost their ace. So you've got to take advantage of your aces starts to make up for that difference. And you know, they're not doing it.
I don't know if the Phillies, I don't know if they're aware of any of this outside stuff, honestly. I don't know. Nothing seems to impact them to change.
It seems, it's like they have a wall around them right now. And it's like there's no music playing behind the wall. They're just isolated still in like this spring training lab a little bit, trying things out. And like, guys, spring training was the time for that. I get it. When the season starts and the games count and things aren't working, you have to make adjustments, because while there are 162 of these, they go pretty fast. And the more you lose early on, the harder it is to dig out of that hole. The Phillies know this.
Yeah.
They cannot get too far away from any NL East team right now. They have to at least keep pace until the Phillies find a song that works for them, or Garrett Stubbs gets a new dog, or I don't know, something. Like, yeah. Something, there has to be something. Like, this is a team that, like, Justin, you saying that they don't seem impacted by outside events is really astute, because they feel really robotic at the moment. They feel like wax figures or... pod people. Like they need some kind of spark from something.
Yeah, like as bad as
whether it's the team itself or a stray dog. Yeah.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to talk over you there, but I was just gonna say, as bad as the offense has been, part of what you're saying also factors into how bad the defense has been so far this year. And I don't know if we're focusing enough attention, like we're focusing on the bats because obviously they're not scoring any runs.
We're very tired, John.
I know. I'm blaming you all.
There's
only so many.
You're focusing way too much on the bats. You, in particular, you two haven't focused enough on the defense. Allow me to bring us to the defense now.
I'm very...
You're welcome.
Thank you, John.
You're welcome.
So tired.
You're welcome. You're tired. I'm here for you. So you had a run scored on Saturday when Trey Turner, going to field a ground ball for the final out of the inning, just falls down over his feet and collapses to the ground as the ball hops over where his body had been before gravity grabbed a hold of it and pulled it down towards the grass and dirt. You had a passed ball.
I covered that game for Baseball Prospectus. I said it looked like he fell out of a treehouse. You looked down and looked up, and suddenly his legs were just up in the air.
Yeah.
And you're like, what happened?
What happened there? Trey Turner fell from the sky. And then you also had on. How did the Phillies win the game on Saturday? You had a run score that way. A pass ball ricochets off Real Muto's wrist with a runner on third base. I think it would have ended the inning. I think there were 2 outs in the inning, but it's a fastball on the outside part of the plate. Real Muto just doesn't catch it. Gets crossed up with Junior Marte. The ball goes back to the backstop. Run comes in to score there. In one of the most bizarre things I've ever seen. Never seen anything like that before. You had...
and wasn't there like a PitchCom issue too? Was that game?
I don't know. I don't remember the PitchCom thing.
Literally an endless PitchCom issue. Maybe that was today.
Well, let's look at today, because you had Alec Bohm commit that error that opened the door for the Grand Slam in the inning. For the Pirates' first run, right after the Phillies scored the early run on Trey Turner's home run, Real Muto, for reasons passing understanding, attempts to throw down to second base on a double steal with runners on first and third, and airmails it to center field. I mean, just gifting the Pirates their first run with a two-strike count on the batter and Zach Wheeler in the midst of dealing. Like, it just, they're making stupid mistakes. These stupid fundamental mistakes that are actually costing them real runs. And when you're not scoring, when you're averaging 3.7 runs a game here in the early going, you cannot afford to give runs away like that. Like, right after that inning, right after Real Muto threw the ball in the center field, he leads off the next inning with a single. And then Alec Bohm grounds into a double play. Marsh rips a triple. Like, if you don't ground into the double play, like, that's just how this team, that's how things have gone for this team. Real Muto throwing error, something stupid in the top half of the inning, bottom half of the inning, single, double play, triple. Like, just, the other thing that was funny was Alec Bohm should have been rung up for a called third strike on a ball that was clearly a strike. And then on the next pitch, hits the ground ball double play. Like, just, if you wanted the 2024 Phillies in a microcosm, that was your inning right there.
John, right there. John, you know, let me school you a little bit about baseball.
Good.
You don't want your defense to be able to guess what you're going to do next. So if you just string a bunch of hits together, they're going to figure that out pretty quick. You got to sprinkle in back-breaking double plays, rally-killing mistakes, and just inning-ending tomfoolery that
losing.
Really throws them off. You know, like, really,
losing was really.
They're like, oh wow, I really thought we were going to lose that game to the Phillies, but then they hit so many, they drove the ball straight into the ground every time, and we won. So that really caught me off guard. The Phillies really surprised me today. So all the Phillies opponents are very uneasy. They don't know what the Phillies are going to do next. Could be maybe squeeze a run out of a rally. Maybe just ground straight to second base. Get thrown out at home plate. Maybe you just run right past the base and then oops, you're out. You're out because you got to stay on the base to be safe. You know, they got to
maybe
keep their
Bryson
opponents
Stott
on their toes.
Combusts. Maybe he just spontaneously combusts over at second base. You never know. Anything is on the table.
Yeah. Another base
except
hit.
Except winning.
What are you, the Braves? Come on. Boring.
Anybody.
It's much more. There's so many more ways to lose.
Look, would
than
you rather
win,
the
you know?
Team.
Yeah. That's sloppy. Sloppy play means longer innings. Like, there is yeah. These are like, these issues feed into each other. This is a tangled mess at this point. Longer innings mean higher pitch counts. So that's not doing guys like Zach Wheeler any favors either. It might also mean a pitcher starts pushing to get batters out himself because he's like, well, I don't want to put the ball in play right now because, like, nobody's able to field it cleanly or make the throw they need to make. If a pitcher starts trying to be more accurate as he's getting more tired from throwing more pitches, you get more wild pitches, pass balls, walks, hit batters, whatever Nestor Cortez was trying to do in New York today. It's backbreaking. And on the other side, sloppy at bats and sloppier base running don't let a pitcher relax as long between innings and doesn't give them enough of a cushion to perhaps work more comfortably. Wheeler would never tell you he doesn't trust his guys, and I'm not saying he doesn't, but it's just these in-game moments that cause problems directly and indirectly all over the place from a bunch of veterans who really shouldn't be making mistakes at the levels of frequency or intensity that they are. If you're telling me JT Realmuto is making base running, like, errors, throwing to a base, like, that's supposed to be his specialty. Like, that's, we all knew, like, there would be a time where, oh, he's not the best catcher in baseball anymore. And, you know, nobody's bringing that up yet. But, like, his caught stealing numbers, guys are running on him this year, and they're getting away with
it. And they're doing it because they know they can.
Yeah.
They looked at last year's numbers and they realized, oh,
I mean, that's
a
thing.
We can run on him.
That's going to impact games. And, you know, it's going to be a close enough play thus far this year without him airmailing the ball like that. That's just a mistake he just shouldn't do.
Yeah, he's not making himself look.
He's better than that.
Fearsome. He is better than that. Like, that's what was really frustrating, because not only is that going to carry forward and he's going to have to, like, now be even more vigilant. It was pointless. I'm going to remember that tomorrow and next week and next month. That's going to stay with me because that was so stupid.
Yeah.
It was so dumb. Why are you even doing that?
And you had the incident in the last series where he gets picked off first base, and he and Bryce Harper get in that ridiculous rundown where they, you know, Harper gets thrown out in between home and third, and then Real Muto almost got thrown out at second on the same play, and they run themselves out of an inning there. I mean, it's just they didn't come up from spring training looking like they were a well-oiled machine. They didn't come up looking like they were ready to play. And you can understand, like, the offense starting off slow. That happens. It's these other things, the base running and the defense, that really makes them look worse than an 8-8 team. And Liz, you said something earlier. It's like, it feels like they feel worse than 8-8. Like, why? How is it they're 8-8? It's because we're watching a lot of that sloppiness. And the pitching staff has saved them this year. Like, the bullpen, the only time the bullpen gets in a game that's not high leverage is when we're losing by 5 or 6 or 7 runs. They have not, with very few exceptions this year, pitched in any innings where the Phillies had a comfortable lead. Like, they've been skin of their teeth every single inning. Every single inning has been high leverage, and for the most part, the bullpen has managed to come through, but they've had no wiggle room at all either. So, you know, and we didn't even talk about the worst part of the weekend. And that was Bailey Falter coming in on Friday and mowing the Phillies down, allowing just 4 base runners in the City Connect jerseys.
Predictable.
I mean, we haven't even talked about the City Connect jerseys either, by the way. But that might have been...
We don't have to.
We've been talking about the City Connect jerseys.
We're going to see them again
than they did in this first game, because that might have been their worst overall showing of the season on Friday night in those jerseys. It was a rough weekend. Oh. So...
You know, they're a team that can play a 3-game series and win 2 games by 1 run and lose 1 game by 5 runs and look just as sloppy in all 3. And you come out of it and look at the schedule and you're like, well, they won a series and move on. But that's part of why it doesn't feel like you're watching a team that won 2 series in a row coming into this split with the Pirates. Like, because the losses kind of have the same vibes as the wins. They just, they get sometimes it's like, oh, Alec Boehm hit a
scraping by
RBI double. But it was just like a regular ground ball that got through the infield. Like, it wasn't necessarily like he hit the ball really hard. And I'm not zeroing in on Boehm in particular. It's just that you've seen a lot more like that. You've seen a lot more soft contact, I think, and very few extra base hits when you need them. So that lack of clutchness and the general sloppiness does make it feel like you're watching a worse team that has managed to win a couple of games they could have easily lost.
I mean, I'm going to say our expectations. It's not that our expectations are high, but our expectations are competence. And that is why it feels like they're a lot worse than they are, because they're failing at the basics. And it when they make those mistakes, they should be losing. They don't lose all of those games, but by rights, they should be.
Yeah.
Isolated their mistakes, but together they're a trend. And that does become the word that Liz was using maybe 2 weeks ago, concerning. Because you start to think, if this is a problem tonight and it's a problem tomorrow night, then there's no reason to think it won't continue to be a problem in the nights to come, instead of just, ooh, the ball slipped out of his hand because it was wet.
I'll say this about everything we've seen over these first 16 games, and that's the Phillies did this last year and they did this the year before. I remember so many podcasts during the course of the whole summer last year where we would come on and we'd say, how are the Phillies 10 games over 500? They're playing awful baseball. Like, it was all season.
My tone is
like,
very calm as I say these things.
Why are we surprised? Why do I still get surprised by this? And it's not surprise. It's just
frustration.
But, you know, it's funny. I want to finish on this because... You know, the Phillies, you mentioned, Justin, the fact that they have some cupcakes coming up on their schedule. The Phillies went 2-1 against the Nationals. They went 2-1 against the Cardinals. They split this series against the Pirates. So this stretch of so-called easy games here, you could say the Pirates, maybe the Pirates are better than we thought they were going to be coming in. I'm not sold on that at all, but the Pirates are playing good baseball.
Let's mark the date and time.
Well, yeah, we'll see. I mean, you know, who's to say?
No, I'm not going to hold you to that.
Yeah, but they're 6-4 against those 3 teams so far in that 10-game stretch. They're 6-4. I think we all could and should expect more from the Phillies there. They host 3 games at home this week, starting Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, against the Rockies, who are 4-12. Excuse me.
Can't even talk about them without coughing and becoming ill.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, it's making me. I'm getting all choked up. And then on Friday, they host a 3-game series against the White Sox, who are 2-13. So these two teams are a combined 6-25 to start off the season. This really, I mean, I just don't see any way
around. They
can't
blow this.
They have to win 5 of 6. Like, they just have to. I'm sorry, you've got to sweep one of these teams.
And they're not going to, are they?
But
they're
not. One of these games. They need to. They have. There's absolutely no excuse not to win every one of these games. Sadly, the best news the White Sox have gotten in weeks is that Luis Robert will be back in 6 weeks instead of like longer than that. That's the best news. Yoan Moncada will be back in July, not forever. That was good news. And the best they've gotten in weeks. They are currently having the worst 15 games in the history of the White Sox franchise. First 15 games, sorry. That's 124 years. They have a team 202 batting average. That is 28th in baseball. And they average about 2.25 runs per game. That is last. They have a 4.97 team ERA, 25th in baseball. Between 5.5 and 6 runs allowed per game. That's 28th. They have been shut out in 5 of their 15 games they've played. A third of their games, they haven't scored any runs. If the White Sox beat you, it is an accident on their part. And then the Rockies. The Rockies, Bard is out for the season. Chris Bryant left with back stiffness. Cal Quantrill has more earned runs than strikeouts. In his first two starts, Kyle Freeland allowed 24 of the 40 batters he faced to reach base. He is the ace of the staff. Like he did a little better in his third start, but that's your A number one starter for the Rockies. Their bullpen's been blown up a few times. Their young future stars who are already like up in the big leagues, they aren't really hitting at all. The Rockies are terrible. The Phillies should win 6 games in a row. I don't think they will, but they should.
No. They're going to lose one stupidly. One of these teams is going to score double-digit runs on them during these 6
They'll
games.
They'll be like the White Sox only sweep of the year or something.
It might... And that's what I'm afraid of, because they don't have a lot of cupcake stretches this year. They don't.
This is one of them.
They've got good teams and bad teams mixed in together, and that is how it should be, but it is dangerous for this team. This is the only time, really, they're going to have to get themselves in rhythm without facing someone fearsome. You know, or of course someone that they should beat that they'll end up losing. So they need this. They do. They need this.
Remember when I said Bryce Harper was tied for grounding into the most double plays in baseball? One of the guys he's tied with is on the White Sox. Like they are down there.
I follow some White Sox fans and God bless them. They are clinging to life as baseball fans in general. Because it's not just that the White Sox are bad, it's that ownership is the worst in baseball. And their new GM, president of baseball ops, was the protege of the guy they just fired.
Wow.
Who's been in the organization for ages. Like, the problem with the White Sox isn't just that they're bad now. It's that they're going to be bad for so long, and their owner is got like Henry Kissinger's blood. He's going to live forever. They've got to beat this team. I adore their fans and want to hug them, but they need to be, hope needs to be snuffed out in order for them to get on with their lives. And the Phillies need to do it.
In order for real change to occur.
Lined up on the schedule.
Yeah. You know what? I said 5 of 6 coming in. I'm with you now. Colorado has a 6.33 team ERA, which is worse in baseball. The Chicago White Sox are at 4.82, which is 24th in baseball. The Phillies come in 9th with a 3.67 ERA. Like that alone, they need to win all 6 games. They need to win all 6 games. They really do. And you know, it's inexcusable if they don't. Barring some kind of unforeseen cataclysmic bad luck of some kind where when you're playing a game of Madden and you just have to hit the reset button because it's pretty clear that the computer has decided there's no way they're going to let you have this undefeated season. Like, so you have some games that are like that. And I don't think the Rockies or White Sox are capable of giving that to the Phillies this week. Like, this is just, you talk about a get right week of baseball. This is a get right week of baseball for the Phils. And so we are all in agreement. 6 out of 6.
At the very least, you know, that series against the Nationals where the Phillies kind of just were playing a team that makes the same mistakes as the Phillies, but a little more frequently. they managed to win the series because of that. So even if it's just that, even if it's just definitely playing two teams that are definitely worse than the Phillies and taking advantage of their mistakes, that's good enough right now. Honestly, that is good enough. You cannot let this turn into some kind of stumbling block.
No, today has me worried because Mitch Keller came into today's game with a 5.29 ERA on the season. He left with a 4.5.
Yeah, he's not.
The Phillies scored two runs on this guy who with an ERA over 5. That's inexcusable.
They were shut down by Bailey Falter on Friday. All I've got for you. I mean, it's just
we're gonna remember that one too. This Pirates series is really gonna stay with me for kind of a while.
And they won. And the thing is,
they split it, and they should not.
They shouldn't have split the series, but they did. And so it's an unsatisfying series split at home. But the Phillies have a chance to kind of do some damage this week, and I'm not convinced they could take advantage of it. But if they're the team that we think they are, this is a week for the offense to get well. And they absolutely should hit both of these pitching staffs around, especially at home. It's supposed to be a nice weather week, it looks like. We might be done with all the cold weather. So the Phillies are starting to run out of excuses for the offense continuing to stink, especially against this group that's coming in here this week. All right, let's finish off the podcast here with our normal final thoughts. Elizabeth, why don't you go first here with any final thoughts you may have to share with the team?
I'm drinking tea right now. And the tea bag, the little tag on it says, "Your breath fills you with energy anywhere and anytime you need it." And I have started reading, when I read these little things, because I drink a lot of tea, I've started adding, "unless you're watching the Phillies," to them. I started doing this last year to myself. And now I will share this with you since I've brought the tea up here to the to this for the first time. "Your breath fills you with energy anywhere and anytime you need it, unless you're watching the Phillies."
Unless you're watching the Phillies. I think this is a nice little thing to end on. And a little moment of zen from Liz here at the end of the podcast every week with her teabag messages. I like that.
If I'm drinking tea, I will share.
Please do. Justin, final thoughts.
Good to see Orion Kerkering again make his debut.
Yeah, Orion's back.
He came in relief of Sir Anthony Dominguez. He was the only pitcher today of the four who took the mound for the Phillies who didn't give up any runs. One clean inning with a walk and a strikeout. Honestly, when he came out, I was already thinking before he came out in this situation he did that he might have like a rough couple of starts where he's just getting like hit a little bit and is still adjusting to big league pitching and everything. You know, it was just like the worst time for him to do that because people are kind of sick of seeing guys they liked last year stumbling here. And he is such a fan favorite. And I thought coming into that game, they were already now so far behind. It was just like, yeah, he's probably going to give up a couple runs. Nope. That first batter, man, that slider came inside. Oh. And it was just like the fall of 2023 all over again. So, you know, it's just one inning, but it was good to see him again. And it was good to see somebody get a clean inning today.
Yeah, and I think the Ricardo Pinto fund that we had against the Reds a few weeks ago, that might be ending here pretty soon, but it was a nice little ride while we had it, Ricardo. But the Phillies bullpen really is a pretty darn good unit. And if the Phillies offense can ever give them some easier outings, you don't have to use the high leverage guys quite as much. It's a pretty powerful group. And so after that, if you take out the Connor Brogdon starts, I think I saw they have the second best ERA in baseball so far this year. So the Phillies bullpen is doing a very good job.
So.
Yeah, that's what I think.
Again, it does not feel like it after this series.
Next, you're going to tell me Trey Turner leads the team in hits, or Brandon Marsh has hit the most home runs. I mean, come on.
You say that, but I'll bet you if we looked it up.
Things are true.
This is the Trey Turner we paid for.
That's right. All right, everybody. Well, look, that's going to do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. Hopefully the next time we chat at you here in the middle of the week, we'll be talking about a Phillies sweep of the Colorado Rockies. In the meantime, thank you for checking out the podcast. Want to direct you over to our Hittin' Season Patreon, where you can hear Justin and his co-hosts on The Dirty Inning and Absolutely Hammered, and read all his stuff over at Baseball Prospectus. Liz, of course, is doing great stuff over at Yahoo Sports. She's at sports.yahoo.com. Make sure you check all that stuff out there. You can read my work at The Good Fight, and Justin and I also at billypenn.com/hittin'season. I think that's all the plugs. So that's all we got for you here on this edition of Hittin' Season. Thanks. We'll talk to you next time.